Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
On the line, we have our second guest of the show. His name is Eddie Pipesh. Apologies if I've pronounced that incorrectly. He is the Director of International Affairs for Israel Defense and Security Forum. Good morning, Boker Tov, Eli.
Good morning. Pleasure to be with you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, I'm going to make an admission of guilt here that up to a few weeks ago, I had never heard of the Straits of Hormuz. And I actually had to go on Google Maps to see where it was and why is this area of the world such a significant factor right now for so many billions of people. Can you maybe just explain to us why is this area such a massive issue, such a massive place of importance for so many, many, many people?
Well, first of all, you're in good company because I can tell you about 5 years ago, I was going not just to talk to the general public, but to members of Congress and explaining them what Bab al-Mandeb was, which is a similar, very strategic area that was controlled by the Houthis.
Oh, wow. Basically, both
the Bab al-Mandeb and the Strait of Hormuz are significant choke points for international trade. The Strait of Hormuz is where many significant countries like China, like Asia, get the overwhelming majority of their oil energy, our crude oil as well as LNG, gas, that they get directly, and it travels through the Strait of Hormuz. And there had always been a sense that Iran or any country that was right adjacent to the Straits, Iran being one of the countries, would have the ability to shut that down. However, the fact that Iran has chosen to do so only demonstrates how desperate they are, that this is clearly a last choice because it impacts their abilities. And as much as they are trying to project a certain amount of power, control, they're creating harm to the entire world, people should leave us alone, a country should leave us alone. The reality is that the countries who don't just, there are two, in this equation, there's two elements. There's the consumers, the countries that buy and need the gas, the energy sources. Then you have the countries who are selling the energy, so countries who are selling the crude oil, the LNG, who have a difficulty in getting it out.
Right.
Now, once the Strait of Hormuz is compromised in the way that Iran has chosen to do so, both sides have had to make very difficult, expensive, troubling choices,
right,
but choices that no longer make them as dependent. So just this week, Japan received its first shipment of over 1 million barrels of oil from the United States. Much longer, much more expensive, but much more reliable.
Sure.
And now that Japan now understands that that's the reality, the Strait of Hormuz, in a matter of months or years, will cease to be as significant and as important as it is now. More importantly, from an Israeli perspective, is that one of the options of the other Gulf countries who now also see how threatening Iran is to their livelihood, they're also looking at moving or transporting the oil, not on the ocean through the Strait of Hormuz, but actually over land through Saudi Arabia. And that will take it where? Through the port of Ashdod in southern Israel. So the implications are quite significant. The cooperation between Israel, Saudi Arabia, other Gulf countries like Kuwait, are becoming more and more evident, partially because of Iran's actions, not just the military actions, but also this action of closing the Strait of Hormuz.
Fantastic. Thank you for that summary, because that actually gives a lot of clarity and a lot of information, so I appreciate that. So this morning I was looking, and I see that Trump is obviously a very busy man with everything going on in his life, but I see that he actually told his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Steve Witkoff to not go to the negotiations, which I think were taking place in Islamabad in Pakistan. Is this how significant is this, and how, where's this going? How's this going to pan out?
Yeah, it is fascinating to be following world news in tweets formats and breaking news. It's perfect for this time where people are desperate for quick hits and the. But the reality is, what President Trump really has seen is that he's upsetting the entire model or the entire approach to foreign affairs that has been in effect for the entire, I would say, Western world since the Cold War. The Cold War, wow. The model was, let's make sure that our enemies don't misunderstand what we are doing, our intentions are, because that might lead to somebody accidentally starting a nuclear war. So let's always have communication. If we do something, we want to communicate with the Soviets, or the Soviets want to communicate with the West, so that there wouldn't be any miscommunication. There would always be clarity what we're trying to do. What President Trump saw is that countries, autocratic countries, countries that are not, have no accountability to voters, can say what they want, can right. do what they want, and there's no accountability. Namely China, certainly Russia, and Iran. And what President Trump has said is, I don't want to be limited by the certain expectations of what's being said in the media. He doesn't care about the media. He works in his own way. And he has at this point become a little bit impervious to that and can almost say exactly whatever he wants to say to try to impact a certain audience. Sometimes that audience is Iran. Sometimes that audience is Arab countries that don't have relations with Israel but wants them to be able to work with Israel. So he pushes. He says, I'm pushing Israel hard. Sometimes it's China. But he says, and that's why he can change his mind in a matter of 30 seconds. And it seems like he's changing his mind. He's not. He's just changing the audience. And he's trying to say, you think that we need to be predictable? I'm saying, no, I'm unpredictable. And I think the reality is, as people say, well, can we trust President Trump? The reality is that people, he's getting different countries, whether it's Europe, whether it's Gulf countries, to understand that you need to take him seriously, that he can do anything, and that's exactly what President Trump wants.
So a simple question, but in reality it's not such a simple question, but who's in charge? Who's running Iran at the moment?
That is a very good question. It's not clear that there is that much strong central governance. Wow, and I think that is probably one of the best reasons why we should try to avoid going back to kinetic war with Iran as long as we can, because I think that ultimately will lead to the regime change that is the ultimate goal of the U.S., of Israel, and I think of the free world, even if they're afraid to say it. Whether the supreme leader, the son of Khamenei, Mojtab Khamenei, whether he's alive, whether he's not alive, over this past weekend or end of last week, there was breaking news from the New York Times that came out with very detailed information about the extent of his injuries. And, in some ways you can say, well, that seems to indicate that he is alive and that he's still doing things. On the other hand, when things are leaked, particularly to the New York Times, it's usually leaked for a reason. It wouldn't be a bad chance when you're leaking with that kind of detailed information, pretty good chance that it's almost like thou doth protest too much. Like, you know what? Maybe there's actually nothing there and trying to get people off the hunt to say that he is alive. The reality is that what both the U.S. and America, they were able to decapitate the Iranian regime. And the Iranian regime always understood that he would be able to function without their top leadership, their secondary leadership, tertiary and fourth level and fifth level. That starts to become a little bit more challenging. But it's not so difficult to automate shooting missiles to Israel. Shooting missiles to the Gulf countries might be a little bit more challenging. But governance, that's much more challenging. That's when you're going to see that this is the fifth string leadership. When they're trying to deal with governance, they're trying to deal with rebuilding, they're trying to deal with the patronage, which was robust, the corruption that was all part of the Iranian society. When you don't have the top leadership and you have fourth or fifth level, there starts to be a lot of, that's when I think the cracks are going to take hold. And the longer that they are not in a defensive mode fighting back against America and Israel attacking them, they're just trying to deal with governance, that's when it is more likely for the local population to realize this is not happening, this is different, I'm not getting my patronage, I'm not getting paid as an IRGC fighter, it's been a few months, I haven't gotten paid, and this is not changing. And I think that's when there are going to be changes. But when it comes to who's running it, the IRGC, the leadership of the military, always had a significant role. Now I'd say the role is more robust, gotcha. But they don't have as much central control as they did in the past.
Well, it's safe to say lots of moving parts there, and lots to more. Yes. The story is going to be developing, and there's, I feel like we're going to be chatting again in the not too distant future about this. Eli, thank you so much for joining us. I feel like I've just had a crash course in this topic, and I actually feel a little bit better off and more educated from it. Thank you very much for your time, and may it be a fantastic week ahead for you.